Inheritance. Presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with the American Legion. Stories out of that great fabric of visions, struggles, and accomplishments of the American past. Struggles about our inheritance.
And when the people of David were afraid to go and encounter the dangers of the Lord said unto them, Arise, go down to Keilah, for I will deliver the Philistines into thy hand. Now, my brethren, I say to you, the time has come to arise and go down to Keilah, and the youngest and the strongest must lead the way. And one of you must be David.
These were the words of Pastor John Robinson, spoken to a secret meeting of his congregation in a basement in Leyden Hall. The year was 1619. In the group was a young man named William Bradford.
Dorothy?
Hush.
I've just come from the meeting. Pastor Robinson says that...
William.
Oh. Well, the boy, how is he?
The fever is on him again.
We should not have permitted him outside so soon.
He seems so much better.
He is sickly, and we cannot blink it.
Well, and it be so. He has much beauty of soul.
You have supper?
Some porridge. The meat is gone.
Many do without these days.
How went the meeting?
The pastor was aflame tonight. He urges us to leave Holland.
When we have been here only a few years?
The Dutch have ended their treaty with Spain. They make ready for war.
That does not concern us.
It concerns us mightily. Our congregation will not long weather the fury of Spain.
Where would we go?
America.
To perish like Blackwell?
Blackwell was a rash fool.
He died at sea only last year trying to reach America with 130 of our friends. That is not foolishness. It is suicide.
Speak not of suicide.
Is the going decided?
All depends on whether we can obtain support. There is a man named Weston who represents the Merchant Adventurers of London. He believes they will finance our voyage.
I hope it is not so.
Dorothy.
Our child could not survive such a voyage.
That is for the Lord to decide.
It is true, and you know it.
After many delays and obstacles, the agreement between the colonists and the merchant adventurers was verbally concluded. And the separatists or congregationalists who had fled from England to Holland 12 years before now prepared to embark on still another pilgrimage.
Well, it is done. The house sold, the profits invested with Martin and the others in this adventure.
When must we leave?
A ship should reach Leyden in a week. Carver and Cushman are in London now making a final agreement with the merchants.
I must begin to prepare things. We'll need utensils and warm clothes for the child.
Dorothy.
He's very excited.
Dorothy.
What is it, William?
The boy cannot go.
Cannot go?
He's too frail.
What will become of him?
I have already spoken to his grandfather, John May. We will leave him here. When we are comfortably settled in America, the others will bring him.
Leave him? Oh, no.
We have no choice.
Why not stay here? Believe as you will, no man can read your thoughts.
No. I am proud of my beliefs, and I will not cover them with hypocrisy. I hold with the covenant that I cannot be a Christian except by my acts and by my deeds. You know it well.
Yes, I do know it, William.
Then you know why we cannot stay.
I will go with you.
It must be freely. And without recrimination.
Freely. And with love.
The farewell took place in Delshaven in late July 1620. On the bark Speedwell, the pilgrims went to Southampton, where the ship Mayflower was waiting. On their arrival, however, things were not well.
Gentlemen, order, if you please. Those of us who preceded you to England bid you welcome. The news we have for you, however, is very grave. Our agreement with the merchant adventurers has not been signed.
But it was accepted by Mr. Weston in Holland.
Peace, Mr. Carver. Mr. Weston informs us that he was acting only as an agent. His masters now wish to change the agreement.
The devil take them!
No doubt he will, Mr. Standish. However, in order to sail, we will have to forfeit certain rights and monies.
Thievery!
The only alternative is to turn back.
I say turn back. I have no stomach for this business.
Doubtless others feel as you, John Cushman. Let each man be heard, William Bradford.
Sirs, I am a young man little acquainted with knavery such as this affair of the merchants. I have sold my house, parted with my only child, and come here in good faith to help establish a free place of worship for our congregation. If there be any way to reach America, whatever the sacrifice, I say we must explore it. What does this knave Weston want of us?
The terms he now puts to us are these. That, whereas it was formerly understood that each of us would work for himself for 2 days a week and for the merchant's company 4 days, now the investors wish us to work all 6 days for the company.
This makes us slaves and bondsmen. It is for dogs, not honest men.
Well, we must decide. Either we abandon our journey, or we agree to these terms.
The pilgrims did neither. They managed, by a payment of £100, giving up much of their stores and equipment, to influence Weston and the investors to let them sail without signing the articles of agreement. Instead, they signed a letter stating their intent to serve a minimum of 7 years, with the possibility that they would serve additional years provided they went to America as free men and not as bond slaves. The merchants, realizing they could never shake them from this position and not wishing to lose what they had already invested, agreed to let one vessel, the Mayflower, sail. Thus, on a September morning in the year 1620, the ship Mayflower, with its small band of men, women, and children, set out for the coast of America.
Delay there! Strike all sails! Take it about poles! Mr. Clark!
Aye, sir.
Lay out oil bags and put out the warps. Now hurry, man, jump to this storm. We'll have us all at the bottom of the sea.
Aye, aye, sir. Captain, sir.
What is it, man?
Mate, sir, she's leaking badly amidships.
And the pumps.
The pumps are no use, Captain. The garboard is buckled.
Heaven help us. Let's get below. Mr. Black, take charge.
Are we badly damaged, Captain?
Badly enough, Mr. Brewster. The garboard strake is buckled. We've tried to force it back in place, but it's no use. She's taking water too fast for the pumps.
How long will...
Another hour of this, and we'll have to abandon ship. Make your people ready.
Captain.
Mr. Bradford?
I think I know a way to force the planking back down.
So long as it's not by prayer.
We have a jackscrew among our supplies for use in building houses. I think if we can brace it against the main deck timbers and force the planking down again, you may be able to repair the damage.
Bring it forth, man.
I will, sir. And we will pray, too.
And so the band of pilgrims, calm even in the face of death, knelt in prayer while the men of the Mayflower placed the huge wooden screw in position and turned the wind.
Well, Captain?
If that main timber will hold, if the deck be not forced up, we will yet save her.
Easy, she's cracking.
No, go on. Another half turn and we can put a beam across it. Another half turn.
After they had suffered 9 weeks of storms, leaks, being blown off course, freezing in the watery bilge of the ship, pumping day and night, the day dawned when the Mayflower hove into sight of land.
Land ho! Land ho!
Where away?
Dorothy, it's land. We've arrived.
How bleak it is.
No, I've heard the Hudson Valley is a land of plenty.
It is bleak, William. Very bleak.
Dorothy, this must be a great moment for us. Can ye not muster a smile?
It would only come out a grimace.
The boy?
Oh, William, my heart longs for him so.
You shall see him again. Be brave.
I try so hard, William, but my heart is as frozen and flowerless as this spit of land we approach.
Who's on the back? Maintop aback. Helmsman, pinch her a bit. We'll need to sound.
Captain Jones.
Mr. Brewster.
What is this land we approach?
By my chart, it's the Bay of Massachusetts.
Massachusetts? Are we off our course?
Aye, the storm did that.
How long will it take us to the Hudson?
We cannot go to the Hudson, Mr. Brewster.
But our patent calls for us to settle in the Hudson Valley. This land is frozen and sandy.
I'll not take this ship into open seas until she's reconditioned.
And how long will that take?
Several months.
Months? Man, this is winter. We cannot live upon this ship for even another week.
Your choice, sir. I can do nothing.
I will call my people together, Captain. We shall decide. Well, gentlemen, what is your pleasure?
I say let us frame a compact here and now declaring our common intent. And that being done, let us send some volunteers in the small boat to find a suitable place for settlement.
Aye.
So be it.
November 27th, the shallop was lowered and an exploring party headed for the mainland. Heavy winds and huge waves chilled and soaked them. Toward nightfall, they landed near the Pamet River and began to search for a place to settle.
I do not like the look of this land, Mr. Bradford.
It is too sandy to farm, Captain Standish, that's certain.
We cannot proceed much further. We'll have to spend the night here.
Wait.
What is it?
Look. Is that not a footprint?
If not, I've never seen one.
Caution the others.
Light your matches, men.
See ahead there. Mound of earth.
Aye.
We'd best have a look.
There are boards over it.
Force them away. We'll see what's beneath.
It has the semblance of a grave. There. Bring a torch closer.
Bones. It is the grave of some savage.
It is a grave, Mr. Bradford, but of no savage. Look you. These bones are done up in a sailor's greatcoat. Here is a packing needle.
This and beyond, still another. What manner of men came thus to be slain, Captain?
What is more important? Who slew them?
Had the pilgrims known the answer to this question, probably they would have put to sea and sailed away. 4 years before, an English slaver named Hunt had landed on these shores. He had lured a number of Indians aboard his boat and tried to sail away. When they resisted, he had massacred them in sight of their families. The graves which faced the pilgrims now were those of 60 French sailors who had landed only a few months before. All had been killed. The other men were in favor of returning at once, but William Bradford's eloquence held them back. He had in the back of his mind, however, a personal reason for his determination. Life aboard the Mayflower was becoming intolerable, and his wife, Dorothy, had become more and more despondent. 1 week after this exploration, the shallop set a bold course across the bay, and by evening drew alongside the mothership.
Hello, Mayflower! Hello!
Drop a ladder, sir. Did you find a place to set?
We did that, Elder Brewster. A most fine place with a safe harbor. Lend me your hand, sir. It is a promontory with deserted cornfields, fresh water. We can rejoice, Elder.
Our rejoicing will be tempered by sadness, William.
Something is amiss?
A good deal.
Sickness?
That and more.
Death?
Yes.
Who has the Lord seen fit to? I fear thy look, Elder.
With good cause, William. The sorrow is yours.
Mine? Dorothy. Oh, no. Nothing has happened to my Dorothy. She was well when I left. She was... Is it so?
God be with you, William.
When? What happened?
The day after you left in the shallop, she plunged from the deck into the bay. We buried her on Provincetown Hill. I'm sorry, William.
I should not have left the child. She died for want of the child.
You could not foresee such a thing?
No, I could not foresee. This is a hard land to which we have come, Elder. There is a chill upon the earth.
The long journey was ended with a mixture of sadness and joy. Within a week, the ship was anchored off Plymouth Rock, and ashore, the sound of ringing axes was heard as a work party began to build a common house for meeting and worship.
It is a good sound, eh, John?
I must stand a moment. The breath freezes on my face.
Look yonder at William. He works like one possessed.
He drives himself too much. It is as if he were punishing his soul for the death of his wife.
It is a grievous loss for so young a man. Sometimes I look at my Rose and I wonder if I did right to bring her here, but she is here and I... What's that?
The ship's gone.
There's trouble.
Savages?
No, our sentries would see them. No, this is trouble aboard ship.
A boat's put forth. Come, let's have a look.
Give her a hand on the beach. What news, Mr. Clark?
The captain bids Dr. Fuller come aboard the ship at once.
What's the trouble, Mr. Clark?
Ship fever, Mr. Carver. The plague has started.
Now, day and night, the pilgrims were faced with illness and death.
You work too hard, William.
How goes it in the sick house?
Badly, I fear. Martin is dead. There are 7 families orphaned.
And on the ship?
Even worse. There, the sailors care not for one another as we do. When a man is sick, he is left to die.
At least the leaders of our congregation have been spared. Brewster and yourself and Carver.
And you, William.
I am hardly a leader, Miles.
Others say you are.
Well, I'm... Miles, look, in the forest. Red men, many of them.
Yes. They come toward us with bows.
They see us. Perhaps they're friendly.
I do not like it. Hello! You, Sally!
They're shooting. Miles, the alarm.
We have only one chance, the cannon. Quickly, light a fuse.
I have flint. Wait.
They run. We frighten them off. William! Yeah. William, what is it? Yeah. Are you struck by an arrow?
No. No, there's nothing.
On January 11th, William Bradford, stricken by the plague, was taken to the pest house to die. This left six able-bodied men to defend the garrison, minister the sick, fetch the wood, hunt for food, and wash the clothes. William Bradford did not die, however. On March 3rd, he was brought out of the pest house into the sunlight for the first time. Within a month, a treaty of peace had been signed with the Indian chief, Massasoit, and with this treaty, the establishment of the colony in America was assured. In December of 1621, however, still another calamity befell the tiny community.
Mr. Bradford! Mr. Bradford! Come quickly!
What is it?
The governor.
John Carver?
He's had a stroke. I fear it is fatal.
John Carver's death was a blow to the colony. He had guided them with great courage and wisdom. He had been the political head of a tiny socialistic state of 20 men and their families. He had regulated the common supplies and meted the common justice. Now came the task of finding his successor. The 20 voting members of the colony came together in the common house for this purpose.
Gentlemen, it is more or less agreed among us who shall be the next governor of our colony if he will but accept the responsibility. I offer the name of one whose devotion to our cause has been zealous and unquestioned. William Bradford. William, do you accept?
Gentlemen, I am honored by the goodwill you show me. But I cannot accept. Before you give me this honor, let me be candid to say I am opposed to the course we have pursued. Hitherto, all labor has been in common, and the results placed in the community store for the equal benefit of those who produce much and those who produce little. Under this system, the less earnest are showing less zeal in the common tasks. I say we must have a new system. We must have individual ownership of the fruit of our toil, still bearing in mind that we have a common cause. I believe that we must restore dignity to each individual man so that he may take pride in what he and his family accomplish. Let each give a portion to the common store, but keep all else for himself as he wish it. I think it only fair ye all know my position before ye offer me this honor.
Gentlemen, you've all heard William Bradford. What he proposes is to establish a new system for our colony. If you accept his plan, it will separate you from the common mother colony as a young man is separated from his mother when he attained maturity. You will gain freedom, but with more freedom will come greater risk and greater responsibility to yourselves and your loved ones. I put it to you now. Let us have a vote.
William Bradford became governor of Plymouth Colony. Under his leadership, the communal system under which the colony had operated to date was modified into the great system which gave birth to our American democracy. Shortly thereafter, William Bradford wrote these words in his diary.
After this course was settled, and by that their corn was planted, and they were only to rest on God's providence.
This was our inheritance.
have been listening to Inheritance, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with the American Legion. And now it's our privilege to hear from Mr. Earl Cock, Jr. of the Legion. Mr. Cock.
That those who fought to preserve our inheritance should receive our respect and assistance is an American tradition. The Vocational Rehabilitation Amendment, signed last year by the President, called for an increase in the number of persons rehabilitated from 70,000 in 1954 to 200,000 in 1959. This means that many more rehabilitated citizens will need job placement. The American Legion's program has been developed to provide that each veteran will receive a maximum opportunity in the field of gainful employment. It is a broad program designed to be of full service to all veterans and include activities in the interest of employment of the disabled veteran, employer relations, veterans employment service, on-the-job training, and apprenticeship programs, encouragement of the employment of the older workers, selective placement, and counseling. The American Legion departments and posts have had full employment offices and committees from the very earliest days. These on-the-job workers have been the real wheel horses which have performed yeoman service for our veterans. Legion departments are currently sponsoring a program of awarding citations of merit to those employers who are outstanding in the field of hiring the physically handicapped veteran and are in every way cooperating with the President's Committee on Employ the Physically Handicapped. The Legion recognizes that the veterans are the most capable and the most effective members of the labor force. Employers who have made room for the handicapped veteran in their employee ranks report that those workers are unusually painstaking, loyal, and dependable. It is ability, not disability, that counts. The American Legion urges management to find places for those who have, in the heat of battle, secured the freedom of our inheritance.
Thank you, Mr. Cock. Next week, Inheritance will take you on another journey through the pages of American history. Today's story was written by George Lefferts. Included in the cast were Leon Janney as Bradford, Dolores Sutton as his wife, Stotz Cotsworth as Carver, John McGovern as Brewster, Lawrence Kerr as Miles Standish, and David Gothard as the narrator. Inheritance was produced by William Welsh and directed by Daniel Sutter. Roger Bowman speaking. This is the NBC Radio Network.
Enjoy fine variety entertainment on the Dennis Day Show, today over most NBC stations.